where it might be in the neighborhood, where it might be in the model, how we might describe that it's working, okay, functional, good, nominal, you know, every synonym of we're fan, every synonym of we're good, and the customers were the ones that had normalized all that data. Which turned into them spending all their money on certain stuff, you know, on like consulting services or their IT services to normalize data, and not spending their money on everything else. The other thing that I think is a fallacy among those vendors is that management is the way to differentiate yourself. Good management is the way to differentiate yourself. Common management, living into an interoperable environment, is a good way to differentiate yourself. But making your own maps, making your own models, making your own GUIs, that's not a good way because customers are the ones that have to bring all those things together. Where the value is, it's in your features and functions and what you can do and how you perform, not how you publish your data. So that's where SIM came in. The other thing that's interesting is a lot of work on management focused on protocols. That's really nice, but getting data is actually relatively easy compared to trying to even normalize the data and become semantics. Other things, you know, Excel comes along, we have a kind of site system that says, okay, what happens when Y amount comes along, or Z amount comes along. It's not about how you render it, it's about what it means, and that you can really use it. So it's really not about how you communicate, but what you communicate, what the data is. So then the next question comes along, that it's really nice, you know, to know that, your fan is okay and nominal, or that you have 10 gig of disk space or something like that. And you may need to know that at certain points in time, but that's really not what a business cares about. That's not what the end users care about. That's not what the environment cares about. They care about, can I communicate? Can I access my storage? Can I get more data? Can I do my job? Obviously, can I make money? Can I crawl around the web looking for information? Can I connect my global environment? That's what they care about. So, in all of that, 10 gig of disk space for a failed fan really never entered into the equation. And so, how do you upload this? How do you make it relevant to business, not to this one particular device? How to make it end-to-end distributed. How do you really focus on, I need computing resources, I need storage resources, I need networking resources, you need all these things relevant. So they're all kind of equivalent. Anyone that's broken will impact you. Anyone that's not performing the best it can will impact you. But really, at the end of the day, it's about your information. Sharing information, and storing it, communicating it, and working with it, processing the tasks of the business, which is really a very different perspective than most vendors have who make the compute and networking and storage products. They come at it thinking storage is the most important thing in your system. It's one router all by itself, the most important thing. And that's just not it. Taking that theme a little bit farther takes you to these different perspectives. The end user's perspective versus the vendor's perspective versus what the vendor knows and what the customer knows and the end user knows. They're all very different. And so, like in a big Cisco scheme of things, you know, my laptop, my processor, my fan really doesn't matter to the Cisco business at the end of the day. Might impact it, but some small people in the Cisco. But it's not Cisco. Cisco's got their whole IT, they've got all kinds of things they run. So what's the priority for Cisco? It's not necessarily my priority. What's the priority for Cisco is keeping some of its storage up, keeping its network up, its IT network. What's important at different times of day, different groups vary. So one single vendor's product may be really important to one group and another totally different kind of product, different vendor is important to another group. How do you manage that kind of environment? Like, data, their own ways of being managed. That's the environment the city has implemented. So we kind of said, you know, given a lot of what's in the DMTR came out of customer environments and vendor environments. So I was a customer long before I was a vendor person. And it was kind of like, what would be the ideal world? Well, the ideal world would be that you can really work at the big picture level, at the business level. You can really worry about your services and how they're operating and functions, and you can jump into the management side of things when things go wrong, or when you want to bring in new hardware or new software to have a vision. So management is there, but that's not your focus. That's not where you spend all the money mobilizing the data, then it's mobilized for you. And that you're working on at a much higher level, but within that higher level, you understand what are the components of what are the resources that support this higher level business that you're doing. And you only go down to those components when you have to, when it's necessary. So you really do have to get some standardized semantics. A lot of people say, well, I can't do that, but I mean, when we sit around a room, we look up, this is a laptop, I don't have a fan, I know where the mouse is, I know where storage is. There really are. We already have all these standard standards. We don't express them that way, though. It's kind of what all these vendors are telling me now is automatic and unmanned and computing, and it's this, how do we move to the next generation of computing where we really policy, self-managing, self-healing systems, interoperable knowledge is something that I call it, that's what policy is, that what you're really trying to encode in the rules of thinking that somebody does, when they're in the IT department, and thinking that the vendor does, of how best to run their product, and encoding that in a set of rules and then disseminating that. That's, I think, the real value of policy. Is knowledge. So what do you need? You need a common information model, and then ultimately you need policies. Now, initially, you can just write down policies, and then ultimately you can automate. So one solution was, let's go with SIM, because you really can't understand what a computer system is, what a storage volume is, what an endpoint is, what a collection is, what settings are, statistics. Those are the kinds of things that are in STEM. It's not rocket science. Like, picking the right word is sometimes hard, but it's not rocket science. So, you know, it is possible to do this. Even if I can't communicate English, I can communicate when I need to go to the bathroom. That's a point for me. The story that I tell about my daughter, there was a whole discussion. She's 10 now. There was a whole discussion about it. I was, I don't even remember the context. And halfway through it, she was totally confused and she had never heard the word Irish setter for some reason before. It's a dog. And so I go, oh, well, it's a dog. And all of a sudden, the whole conversation made sense to her because she knew what a dog was. So the variant of the dog is an Irish setter made less difference to her than an Irish setter all along. And that's the whole goal of STEM. So saying that something is a computer system, even if somebody called it food, some last called it food, you know a lot about it just because you know it is a computer system. You know it is a storage volume. You know it is an interface. And that's what STEM is trying to do. So it's trying to create this basic dictionary of semantics. And we'll say, you know what, you can translate that to whatever you want. We all know, somebody doesn't know English, when I say dog, they may not get it, but if you picture a dog, they would probably figure out what I was talking about. I'm not a very good drawer, so I may not get that, but it would be close enough. So we can translate into XML, we can translate into MIPS, you can translate into anything. But what's important is listening. So one of the things I'd like to give some of this talk is there were a couple articles in Scientific American One of them was on the Semantic Web back in 2001. And it's particularly interesting when we take this, and there was some talk about can render sin in our yes, and that was the point of including this. It was that second bullet that said language strives when they use the same term to mean somewhat different things, but automation doesn't. Computers don't like the same term to mean different things, and they don't like different terms to mean the same things. The example that the article gave is really interesting. It talked about clowns, business addresses, and post office boxes, and that in this database they were talking about a database, and we have clients and addresses in the database, and client birthdays in the database. And this company decided to send a birthday clowns with their clients on their birthday, except they didn't distinguish addresses or didn't have knowledge within their automation that one address could be a real address, another address might be a post office box. So when they sent the clowns to the post office box, anybody at the post office was entertaining, but it typically wasn't the client. And it was kind of just an interesting, you don't always think that way. You think addresses are addresses, cool, except when you have different use cases, and you might need a bit more semantics, and you may need to refine things. So, the second quote they had is, small groups are really effective, but they don't mesh well then into a bigger community, because each group has their own terms, their own knowledge, their own way of expressing things, and when you try to bring it together, it doesn't work. Painfully small takes an enormous amount of communications, how they describe it. So the next part of this is really more about SIM and what's going on in the industry and how it complements GGF. Because there really is a pretty cool overlap here. SIM's whole focus is, although there is a lot of detail about resources, about services and systems and storage, the main goal of SIM is really to talk about relationships. How are things composed together? Where are dependencies? How do things relate? Are these set of statistics for a whole collection of things, or is it a statistic for a single thing? It's about the relationships that you have. Certainly, you have to know what you're putting your relationships against, so you need the basic resources. And the whole goal is end-to-end, that you really can take all these different domains and put them together and build a management picture out of it. The other goal for SIM is that it could help on the management side of OGSA architecture services. It's not the services themselves. You have a logging service that does certain things. You have scheduling services. Those all do a job and a function. But at the same time, you've got to manage them, because if something goes wrong with the logging service or the reservation service, you better report it, and you better figure out what's impacted by it and everything. So the same example works like the file systems. We have a concept of file systems in SIM. Do you read and write files through SIM? No, not. Now, however, if something goes wrong with the file system or it needs more storage, that's where the management infrastructure comes in. So similarly, you can do the same thing with GSA architecture services. And then the other thing that QTF is really trying to do is get some automated mappings there. So once you've got the model, and you've got the model consistent, tools can come along and generate the XML schema for you. And you're not generating it by hand, you're just looking for terminology and trying to mesh these environments together. Oh, I think this is a building slide, so I'm going to build it. I stole this from Jeff Nett to talk about it at OGSA. I don't like building slides. He talked about this in the first OGSA session on Wednesday. So I got this slide from him, because it worked pretty well. You know, kind of said, what are we going to build on? We're going to build on Wistful. We're going to build on common web services. And on top of that, we're going to put capabilities and basic infrastructure, basic knowledge, basic concepts of your resources On top of that, you add services, management services, and then, you know, GSA services, and creating this whole management environment, building on pieces. Can and should everything come from one group? No, because that's not where the domain experts are. DMCF is not the domain experts in GTF. OASIS isn't either. It's GTF that is. So how do you combine together all this knowledge? OASIS is clearly working on the web services stuff and the resource framework. CIMA and DTF are clearly working on models and common semantics. And let's put all these pieces together. So one way to do that is to kind of do this iterative modeling, where the domain experts do their modeling. They use whatever terminology is appropriate for them. They use, you know, this is my domain and this is what I need to do. And then, after you've got that rationalization and that extraction of concepts from a particular domain, then you try to normalize it within a bigger model. And then after it's normalized, you render it. And that's kind of how you make all the pieces fit together. There's an example of that right now in the DTF, the Storage Networking Industry Association, where the SNIA has all the knowledge about storage. They do all the work they have to do, create all the ideas, bring it back to DMTF, where it's working with more rationalized. And then DMTF publishes it, and SNIA uses that and defines it even more in some of their standards and specifications. I'll talk some more about that because I have a whole bunch of slides on what's going on in the industry. So this is kind of like a really high-level view of modeling unification. It always starts with the domain experts. Model proposals. Everybody really had to model them if they played with them. They have something in the back of their heads that they're working from. They're submitted to the DMTF. DMTF will probably come back and say, have you thought of it this way? You know, instead of looking at the problem from the side, look at it from the other side. Might you need some statistics? How do you do this management? I know you picked the word nominal here, but with the word okay work, because that's the word we use and everybody's standardized stuff. Those are the kinds of things DMTF comes back with. Or this concept you have here is kind of blurry. Is it this or that? And maybe it's a little bit of both. And so you want to tease some of those ideas apart. The value of that is that you are taking these siloed domains and putting it in an end-to-end context. So then there's feedback, and it's both ways. It's you know, the GTF guy saying, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, you do. And it's DMTF saying, well, okay, you might not, but just listen to us for a minute longer. The whole goal too is to bring in the WSA from W3C, to bring in the ideas from OASIS. Once the proposal is acceptable, it gets published by the groups and used by the groups in building profiles and interoperability and common standards. So this whole next set of slides is who's working on this today. Actually, I think this is actually more interesting than a demo because I was amazed when I put this together this morning. I was going out on my pages and I asked people for input. Let's see. So I have, just to do a quick thing, I have who are our alliance partners, what open source there is, what other standards we have from, a little bit about SIM, what DMTF is doing, use of SIM in something called the SIM standard model for storage. Vendors that are shipping or soon to ship SIM today. And there was like a pretty big list here. And then some other things that we're doing. So I'll just kind of go through that pretty quick. Okay. I don't know why my slides come in sideways. That was pretty cool. Let's go back. Who are our alliance partners? There are more, but there's things like the Northwest Energy Alliance, where we're worried about power management. I didn't list those guys because I didn't think they were really registered with most people. I never heard of them before they were partner of us. But BladeX, the Blade Server Alliance, they're an alliance partner. Their whole goal is how do we better manage Blade servers? And the whole work that the DMTF has done on on clustering, on partitioning, on computer systems, all of that. CompTIA, Computer Technology Industry Association, they do a lot of certification, but they're also doing work in diagnostics and help desk, so they're really interested in those portions of the INTAP in Japan is an interoperability group, so they're worrying about how to convey notifications, error messages in common semantic and in common format. ITSMF is the standards body, I don't know if they're standards, at least a nonprofit, that are helping to promote the IT infrastructure library specs and books. And IT infrastructure library really doesn't say, here's a standard, it says, here's best practices. And there's a lot of work in SIM that really helps to support all those best practices. And so we're working with them to map those back. That, the NAC is the Network Applications Consortium, which is a bunch of really big vendor customers. And customers get together and talk about all their IT-related issues, how to do identity management, federated identity, role-based access control, using directories. So there's, I think, about 50 customers in the NAC. NIST is the U.S. National Institute for Standards and Technology. They have our partners. They care about general modeling and policy. Open Group, they're sponsoring lots of open source and NAC. Quality service and policy and Unix modeling, SNIA and TNF for the telephone and the telephone management. Those are just some of them. Open source. There is open source out there. Probably the best source to get information is here, this webopensource.org. It's hosted by the Open Group. But it's where you go to get all open source information, where you can go to get Java Web Home Services, Open Web Home, Pegasus, and Pegasus J. Pegasus J used to be known as the SNIA Options Manager. SNIA has on their website a whole bunch of information about what they call SNIA's storage management initiatives, specifications. And the labs that they run. And then there's this thing called Sublime that IBM has been working on out of Engineers Technology Center. Linux instrumentation and then something called CMPI, which is a programming engineers. So all of those specs are on that bottom, that bottom slide. From other standards, SIM has no desire to really reinvent things. The whole goal is to normalize things and get semantics. So the goal is let's map the IETF units, the standard units like the entity nib or the interface nib. So really, most vendors say they support that, so let's get that data in there. And then that's there. DMI is desktop management instrumentation. There's an old thing from DMTF that's mapped in. The ITU concepts of their X series for management. Those are now the tele management form has business concepts and an information model which we're trying to converge. SIM is this model in tele management form or DMTF. Storage side has mappings for the MCT 10 sub. JSR 77 is mapped. Anybody who read the JSR, it's the App Service Factory to EE environment. At the appendix to JSR 77, they had a SIM option. It didn't even compile, so let's not talk about that. So we took it back in, worked it a bit more, tried to rationalize it, and so in SIM version 2.8, there's a J2EE app server now. And everything that's mapped is explicit in the model via something we call qualifier, which is metadata called mapping strings. So you could see where that data came from, how to map it, what its semantics are, and it also helps to say, well, this semantic in the entity map is the same as this semantic in DMI, which is the same as this semantic over here in ITU. Oh my God, it's, you know, they're all, it's the same idea. Different ways to express it. SIM coverage, if you look at this today, there's lots of areas that SIM covers, from the network and the storage and the systems all the way up to the apps and the databases, app server environment, user security principles, credentials, support, the way up and down the site is really help desk environment exchanging information. You have to manage your own infrastructure and policy. So there's the areas, there's groups in the MCF, that are dealing with all those things. So if you look, these are all individual workers. The way SIM is organized is there's something called the core model, which is trying to get a really basic concept. What's an interface? What's a service? A service is any kind of functionality, so it's definitely abstract. What's a system? What's an admin domain? What's a collection? What are statistics? That's what's in the core. And then there's the, well, software needs some special concepts and classes, so there's applications and methods. And policy needs some special concepts. None of the other models, we call them common models, but none of them exist on their own. They all kind of, they also clash in core and they all kind of overlap. So where storage needs concepts from networks, they have to go some interviews with the networks model. Where networks needs concepts in storage or in systems, it goes over there to the system devices model. Or policy overlaps with things, you have to work with the other working groups. The whole goal of the model is nothing stands alone. It all has to fit together. And if there's a concept that your group needs that you think another group is broken, you got to go fight with the other group so that either you resolve what the conflict is, you add functionality, you add semantics. There is no one has the right to say, this is not right, therefore I get to create my own admin thing. Or I get to create my own concept of system. Those things have to be resolved because the way we're looking at it is if we don't resolve what the customer has, that's the wrong place. Let's see what else is there. Utility computing. Oh, there are certain work groups that are kind of interesting. Utility computing. I hopefully have that in alphabetical order. Look at it this morning when I was writing it. Utility computing is a very new one. Behavior in the state is a very new one, and server management is a very new one. Going in alphabetical order, behavior in the state is that, you know, it's really cool that we know about resources, we know whether they're okay or in error or something, but what's really important to know is what state are they in? Was that, and what states can we force them to transition into? How do we better make use of the UML concepts of state and in SIM? And so that group is investigating those things. Server management. That group came out of HP, IBM, Intel, Dell, maybe the other group, of server vendors sitting down with a bunch of customers on Wall Street who said, get your act together. We need common server management, common ways to reboot, common ways to do inventory. Put it together and come back to us with ideas and get it to go across the industry. So the server management group is working on profiles, working on recipes for how you do server management and even a command line interface, because that's what the Wall Street guys are looking to. And utility computing is the group. Whose whole goal is not to invent the functionality of the reservation and lighting services, but one, to help with, do we have all the right resources and services and underlying concepts modeled in SIM? How do we bring them together? How do we propose them in support of grid services and in support of utility computing? How do we manage that whole environment? So that's what that group does. So it's not really, it's not a group that overlaps with GGF, but it's a group that complements who the GGF architect and services are doing. WebM at the bottom is web-based enterprise management. And that was done in the mid-90s, so it's certainly not WSDL. And it's XML over HTTP. It's interesting, but it's a little bit old. So it's something that we're trying to evolve in conjunction with Oasis and with all the new work that's going on. So if you take a look at that, you just got to look at it with the understanding that it's the mid to late 90s that was designed. Okay, what SIMs use? This is the SIM SAN demo, which it was originally called SIM SAN, and all of a sudden with SIM SAN 3, It turned into SNI Lab. So you all, you go SimSam 1, SimSam 2, SNI Lab 3. I did confuse me for a while when I was reading. I was like, what about SimSam 3? And then I finally figured it out. These three events happened in October of 2002, April 2003, and October of 2003. And you can see kind of what they added. It started out with some real basic, can I get from all these square dimensions with this blue inventory? Can I now start to add logical concepts like my gloves, my logical unit numbers, and other storage information? And now, with the SNI Lab 3, it went even further and said, can I actually configure my storage? Can I ask for any vendor with a single method invocation, passing parameters of how I have the storage set up? Can I use a single method to ask for a storage volume to be set up in any vendor's box, in any vendor's array? And the answer was yes, which is pretty amazing, actually. So it started out like a company that's one of 22 companies with 40 products that they brought in and demoed, 300 different points of interoperability, meaning arrays and switches and all their underlying infrastructure, clients. And it started down in instance at one, and it started out with 17 vendors.
Andrew. Just a little comment. And the thing that makes this the most amazing is that in the storage industry, not being compatible was the business. So the fact that this was able to be pulled out is also, I mean, amazing.
Yeah, so even that first demo was amazing, because if you think about it, what happened at the first demo, you had things like a single disk at a sub-1 for 10 workstation reporting storage, all the way up to a high-end attaching machine with gigs and terabytes of storage, reporting and storage, using the same concepts of chassis and racks and physical packaging. It was like amazing. You could say, tell me what your hardware is, what are your packages, and tell me what kind of storage is there, and all the vendors would answer. And it scaled all the way up. And you could use the same kind of queries, the same kind of methods, from a single disk to a high-end system. So just FYI, here's who was in the SMI Lab 3. I put in things that I got off of website, so anybody can get any of this information, because I put it off the SNIA website and press release. But now, more interesting is what are vendors doing here? You will see a lot of storage vendors in this list. I'm sure the touch of them.
So somehow is
yeah. Not to the industry, but what you see on the list is Brocade's doing all this fabric management with Sim. Cisco is using Sim for inventory. What we did, I can talk about what we did because I'm Cisco. We actually took the whole Sim physical and logical inventory model, and we mapped it back into a database, and we said all of our inventory products must use this one database format because we're tired of everybody calling things their own way, designing their own way, and we can't integrate our data from our various inventory products together. You might think that's dumb, and I thought it was dumb, but we couldn't. Our storage modeling and the other stuff that's on Sim, Cisco Works has Sim interfaces, more than interfaces. Dell does all their open managed stuff with Sim and its client data. EMC's got instrumentation. We also call it providers. Providers are the instrumentation, providers of data. For their storage arrays, they've got some work in NAS and some development. They've got clients for their control center. HP, these are the HP links. If people gave me their links, I put them in. If people gave me their words, I put them in. So it's not that I'm trying to be biased. Is that I had to write the talk last night, so I couldn't go and look at everybody's website and look. HP gave some links for what they're doing at their server side and what they're doing on their storage side, and that's all public. Then we get to IBM. IBM's got stuff going on in their I series and their P series and their storage and their Tivoli environments, their clients and data. And then the last set of parentheses is all the stuff that they're doing in your storage environment. Intel, their server management story, version 6.0 is all SIM-based. They have SIM instrumentation with their name adapters. They have SIM instrumentation for SMBIOS. SMBIOS is a system management BIOS at the box. Almost every box will tell you what kind of hardware you have on, what kind of processors loaded into the BIOS. Microsoft's WMI owns management instrumentation, that's all SIM-based. Oracle's Enterprise Management 10G, SIM-based. Smarts Technology has something called InCharge. It's a suite for problem analysis. Something called ICIP, the InCharge Information Model, that's all SIM-based. Sun's Enterprise Storage Manager, there's Solaris Web Services. So that's actually where that open source Web Services came from, that was originally Solaris's implementation that Sun submitted into the open source environment. Their SNC, their System Management Console, that's SIM-based. I don't know where this word is, but it's SIM-based. Vio, they do a whole application quality of service and provisioning environment at the software level. They're all SIM-based. Veritas, and then Web Solutions. Most of the guys at Web Solutions took Sun and started this other company. So most of these guys have come from Sun. They have an SDK, they have a Java server. They're working on a SIM server, a C server, which is for embedded environments, like 2 megabit memory total, less than 1% of the CPU processor. That's stuff like that that can be embedded in storage environments or in networking environments. That's really important because you can't have the ways and bands of storage that some of the open source packages take. Where's work going on SIM today? So you have all these classes, and most people look at the classes and go, oh my god, I will never be able to even remotely understand everything that people have done here, nor do I even want to. So this is where profiles come in. Profiles are collections of elements and behaviors. They're prescriptions, they're recipes for management for particular problem domains. And what's cool is that this is something that kind of makes sense to customers, and it's something that's easy for vendors to describe and for client management environments to say they support. So now, it would be like saying, I support the entity map and I can read the entity map. And the customer goes, cool, I kind of know what the entity map is. I can relate to that. They may not know all the details, but it's in it. I know what that means. Well, what profiles are supposed to do is to say, here's all the SIM classes that if you say you support the profile, here's all the classes and all the behaviors that you say you support. So there will be profiles for storage, the SMAs work. Profiles for server management. That's what that server management group is working on. There will be profiles for utility computing. That's what the utility computing group is working on. There will be basic profiles for inventory, for software deployment, for all these kinds of things. So what it says is, don't even worry about the SIM model. Here's what if you say you support it, here's the classes that you'll report, the ways you'll report it. A client can rely on that. Software. And now a customer can go and say, well, I need basic inventory or I need root cause analysis. What are the profiles that deal with that? And then we pick them off the shelf. If you're a vendor, do you provide the data? If you're a client, do you read the data? And now, because customers don't want to know all about SIM either. So what are the components of a profile, a basic description, something that makes sense to people? Are there any supporting standards that are required? This is where you might reference WSGL. Where you might reference this profile and require a WSGL interface. Are there other profiles that you pull in? For example, if you really want to do a complete storage environment, you typically have some kind of inventory profile in there too. What are the methods that you provide to manage that environment? Not just what's the data, but what's the methods and behavior. How do you do discovery? An instance diagram is provided because if you hand this to anybody in the world, you might not want to see them example. That's the instance diagram example. What are considerations if you're writing a client? What are considerations if you're writing an instrumentation? And then it closes with, here's all of your details about certain elements that you might want to have and what's required in the problems. So it's really kind of just a recipe where you can hand it to somebody and they can go do it without trying to discern from the model all the information that they need. And then there's also work going on in the MTF on Sim3. If you look at Sim as Sim2.x or 2.8, and I'm working with 2.9, the work on Sim3 is supposed to be simplifying V2. There's a lot of things in V2 that are abstract classes up in the hierarchy. You can mush those together and make the top of the hierarchy easier to understand. You can take out some of the classes that are there more for query purposes than for semantic purposes. Over the course of time, we decided to make mistakes, so there's stuff that's deprecated in CD3, all the deprecated stuff comes out. There's also a few other things that's really the focus for D3, which is really a goal of to move into the year 2000, to move into the 21st century, and out of the 90s. They all be UML-based, and represented in a canonical form in XML, so that we could move it into XML schema, we can move it back into something we call MOF, which is Managed Object Format. You can move it into whatever form is appropriate for the environment. We add some data types, which I don't know why we didn't have in the first place, because unions and structs are not a concept, but we didn't have them in our basic set of data types. And a lot of simplifying the model, we've got a top object, you have a single consistent key structure, opaque keys, so that any environment can dictate how keys should be defined. And clean up the deprecated classes. So in Sim3, it's actually, I think that that's a good place to look and focus on. It should be out within a year, the first pass of it. They'll have all the same semantics as V2, but just a little simpler, a little easier to put your hands on. So that's the work in Sim3. I think that is all the slides I have. So if there are specific questions, nobody really fell asleep. Some people nodding at someone, so he managed to stay awake. Yeah?
I'll try. So, Sim and Boylan seems to have a good deal of finicky success there. Maybe Sim and web services seems to be less mature. Right there, pressing that way. So, I'm just curious why you think that might be, and do you think that the pre-lateral work at all kind of work for us resolving that?
So, I think the 3.0 work helps to resolve it, one, in terms of its rendering, because it's a more canonical form of rendering with more tools than exist today for the current system. So, that's more on the rendering side of things. I think V3 helps in terms of simplifying the model and removing classes that are not really necessary. So it's just kind of less to know and less to understand. On the other hand, not really less to understand, but all the concepts stay in. They're just cleaned up a bit. A lot of the work that's going to move forward on utility computing will start out in the, well, could be backported into the 2.x environment. This is really about semantics and the concepts. So really what it is kind of moving, I think Sim3 will help more from the additional data types and some of the other things that we can take better advantage of in the definitions. And this whole move from where we are now, which is a more resource focus into a higher level service focus, which is the direction of all the workloads are really trying to go. So that's not a Sim3 thing directly. Sim3, those couple of things that listed there just make it easier. Yeah.
And, well, I and Andrew, we have talked a lot recently about models and everything, given that models is one of the words in my working group, the CMM working group. And it's two questions, in fact. One is if you could tell everybody about what needs to be done in terms of coordination of models, because what I told you several times is that I have this fear that here in the DGF we're going, there are many working groups which are independent, and each one has the is tempted to create their own models, and in the end when we get the pieces together they might not fit together well. And so this is one of the things that I am worried about. I don't know how, if we have a problem currently, or but if you could talk a little bit about that, more the coordination. And one question above that is that what we need to do here in the GGF in terms of models as a whole, and this is a very generic question, because what I say might be wrong, and so please throw me the laptop or throw me the bottle if I'm wrong. We don't necessarily need to use WebM or SimOM or something, but we need to, let's say, use the model and use a rendering of it, this kind of thing. And so I think that there needs to be some education in the GGF about this sort of things. So perhaps if people hear about SIM, they think, first of all, the people who don't know it, think of this enormous set of models and so on, and they think about the XML rendering and so on, and they think that it has nothing to do with their own models that they're creating in the working groups. And so, okay, SIM is not an option, and that how we educate that, no, this is not the case. This is not the philosophy behind it. So if you could make comments on that, and how we can, let's say, educate the DGF regarding this and improve the collaboration between the DGF and the DMTF.
Okay, so I'll take your second one first.
Okay.
The second question was, most of the time when people hear about SIM, they really hear about SIM infrastructure. They hear about something called SIM object managers, which are like brokers that will interface with clients to your instrumentation. They'll hear about web on this web-based enterprise management and its 1997 ETD and SIM operations and COVID and HTTP. There are a lot of vendors that go to solutions, and that's what we're selling, so that's what you hear. But really, the DMTF has thought long and hard about where its real value is, and its real value is in semantics and the rendering. And in fact, DMTF is not your web services experts. They're not your grid services experts. They're really experts in the modeling and in the whole goal of trying to solve a customer problem with common semantics and normalizing data. So if you look at DMTF and you see object managers and WebM, that's there because it's a necessity. Let's put it that way. In the mid-90s, people said, well, SIM is cool, but like, I don't get its data. Now I'm going to publish common semantics. I want to use these words. I can't put methods in commands. Where do I do it? And so DMTF created an encoding, for better or worse. It's a good news, bad news kind of scenario. And so that whole encoding, that rendering is what most people see and think of when they see SIM. SIM is really the information model independent of any encoding, which is really the point. So if you look at the open source environments, that's all the infrastructure. That's all the object managers and brokers and how you send these operations. That's the stuff that's going to evolve into WSDL and the web services distributed management interfaces and all these other things. And the whole purpose, what I would like to see, this is not everybody in the DMTF, but what I would like to see is that the DMTF really just goes to this model and lets all the other groups who are experts do whatever kind of renderings they want. So you can look at it and think the object managers and everything are good or bad, I don't care. I think the model is good. Now, your first question was, all of the groups in GPF are doing models. And it's true. The best example of this is I was sitting in a network measurements group the other day, and they're doing a request response schema for getting, requesting network measurement data and getting the response. First problem is the request and the response schema are totally disconnected and done on their own in two separate silos, which I don't think is such a good idea. And secondly, somebody said, oh, well, okay, now you're talking about a different path, a jitter on the path, a bandwidth on the path. How did I set that path up? Where can I get more information about the path, you know, its status and stuff? And the person who was doing the response schema said, that's not my problem. That was within the scope of my work. Of course, that's what a customer is going to say. You know, oh, I got jitter, I got bandwidth problems, I want to know some more information, I want to know about the node, I want to know about its interface, I want to know how it's configured, I want to know about the status of the overall path, I want some more statistics about it. Sorry, that's not my problem, that's not a good answer. That's where something like the DNTF models can help, because you can fit the jitter and bandwidth information within a bigger picture, and although one vendor person's code will address maybe jitter bandwidth, another vendor person's code can address the nodes, can address the interfaces, and you can start to assemble all the data together, which you can't if it's siloed. So that was just an example just from 2 days ago that's a prime example of this. When you really focus on something, it's I got this problem solved, but you always create other problems too that come out of it or you need more data. And that's how we value fitting into a bigger picture, like the semantic web article in Scientific American says, it's a bit painful. It's painful to have to fit into a bigger picture. But the way I figure it is either we fit or the customer gets the pain, but somebody's got to get it eventually.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the bigger question is, how can we educate the GGF towards understanding what really SIM is and what models, how we should deal with models, etc., etc. It's not a question that should be answered here. I think it's a process that we need to think about.
Well, this is something that we want to do, and so that's why we are planning a workshop for GGF 11, and you know, we hope that a lot of GGF members will come and learn more details about SIM. I mean, this presentation expanded fivefold or whatever to have more details. And,
okay.
Especially expanding the slide and how it interfaces with the web services.
And let me just get my laptop here so that, because I guess what I'm going to say, Andrew is going to throw the bottle on me. But perhaps you shouldn't use the word SIM, but perhaps modeling, because if you say SIM, it will freak people out in the sense that, I mean, they'll think of SIM armor or something, but. No, no.
I don't think so. I suspect most people in the GGF currently don't really know what SIM is. So,
which is the danger.
Not going to think of SIM on because they don't even know what SIM is. I mean, only people who have, you know, some experience with SIM will actually think that. So I don't know if that really is something for you.
I don't care what you call it, actually.
It's more marketing than a technical problem, but anyway.
So I wonder slightly if the risk in holding a workshop is that as the main examination is, and this is kind of requiring the GGF to come to you to some extent, rather than you related to the GGF. So what do I mean by that? So the GGF tends to consist of very large numbers of small groups, and it's quite difficult for any group that in a certain sense is a cross-cutting objective. I mean, the benefit that an individual group gets from the cross-cutting sense is pretty small, I guess. The benefit comes from the fact that you don't have any interactions trying to work out what the boundaries are. So the benefit is really is looking across the groups.
Just one quick thing. the benefit to a group may need to expand its perspective related to other ideas that they might not have thought about. Not like that it's expanded, I think, from measuring the scope beyond the scope, but to say, did you think about the problem this way? Which is just a bit of a different.
Yeah, sure. So I didn't intend to suggest that there was no problem.
You said
But in a sense, my sense is that the real value comes from consistency across multiple spaces. And the main characteristic of the GTF has to be the weakness of the GTF from its strict structure is that it doesn't talk down to you or not. So one of the things which the GTF has recently said is that it wants to try to use OFSA as a context for imposing some sort of top-down discipline on the activity with the view to some of the groups used to a meeting, but not to the overlapping of missing and then denying to be awake. So I wonder about the ability to get a profile for Thorsten within the OFSA working group, in particular within the OFSA architecture document. That, I mean, I suspect, and I'm tracking that much, but the OFSA architecture document will be a document that will, that will seek to, in some ways, actually the top-down view. And I don't know whether this is a place that I'm trying to get in.
Well, in fact, in the CMM working group, I have a hidden plan to do that, which is the documents we're writing now in the CMM working group, they're going into the OGSA spec, and there's one part of this document, which is chapter 4 of our gap analysis, which is what should we do about models. And so I'm getting some memory dumps from Andrea, from Dave Snelling, etc., on how to do that. And I'm asking everybody contributions on how to do, what to do regarding models. Okay. And then when we get something really good, this can go into the OGSA spec. My intent is to put it there. So if you have ideas on that, please send it them to me, either CMM working group or, well, now the work is the CMM working group, so send it to the CMM working group.
Yeah. Let me make this question from more, I guess, methodological approach. What does SIM have to offer? What is the SIM approach in terms of modeling things like the reference model, which OGSA really is, or toward modeling things such as workflow management? How do you represent processes such as workflow management in a SIM model, or information that is in OGSA, which is kind of a higher reference model? How is that captured in SIM?
So, regarding workflow, we don't have an answer right now. That's one of the things the utility computing group is supposed to work on, and it's going to work on it in conjunction with all these cases and OGSA and stuff like that to try to come up with a good representation. In terms of the higher level services or the reference models that are there, there is this thing called a SIM underscore service. That's actually in SIM, with the assumption that services are made up of other services. Services have access points, which are like the endpoints that are in the models. So there is good, not necessarily for all the semantics that are there, for all the different kinds of services, but there is a good structural synergy between the basic concepts of services and their endpoints and the web services and how you might construct them and how you might distribute them. That's a SIM that you can build on. I definitely think the higher level services that OGSA talks about are not there. So just to go on, an example is provisioning services, right? There is something called the storage configuration service, which is a basic storage provisioning service. And configuration service. That's something that's there already in SIM. Is it there for other things? Not yet. But that's kind of how we're growing this up. We're growing it up based on where the people that participate in the work groups are showing interest and want to do the work, with the goal of saying, we know that overall provisioning is a problem, overall configuration is a problem. Let's get some experience with it and then grow that.
What we try to capture the OGSA models as representing the OGSA documents in UML? Or would you go pass on that and start doing out a little low?
I think I would start doing out a little low.
Okay.
And like I said, if there's anything related to the OGSA services, it's some basic management information about that the services can report if they have errors or they have problems, some statistics. But I think it's definitely a little low to start, and then just some information, some advice on helping manage their services. Now, of course, that's my opinion. I talk a lot.
I think you've got a really good contribution to make in area of workflow management, because there's so much workflow that's happening here in KGM, and so many different workflows that have been coming to know a lot of first. There's a several point we can go to in the garden.
Yeah, actually, the utility company part of the group is just kicking off in its first face-to-face meetings at the end of March, so in Mountain View, California. At Veritas, right. So that's one of the fun things we've got to start working on.
Okay, thanks. And so let's think. Just a few minutes talking about this workshop proposal. These are some suggested topics for what we would cover in this workshop. So one main focuses would be just, how to think about going to modeling and, how Sim uses it. Basically, some of the things that Andrea mentioned today, but in some more detail, especially about the modeling process itself. And then talking about the interface between the SIP data and web services and how we get data between them out of it. Plus, demonstrations of products that actually have been using SIP. And a presentation about the future, especially whatever we can say about V3 as well. So the question for people here is, is there anything else or an interest? I mean, what do you think you would like to know about SIP, or that people in the GGF should know about SIM? Is there anything we should add to this agenda before we actually submit the proposal?
Perhaps how SIM can help your working group? For instance, if you're writing something and then you have an implicit model like the ones in the work, the CDDLM, JSDL, etc. Not JSDL, but etc. etc. So how SIM could help?
You mean specifically address the specific working group?
Good question. Perhaps, I don't know.
I would rather not pick on specific working groups unless that working group was okay with us picking on.
Agreed.
If I'm not just interjecting here, for you that don't know me, I'm Tom Rowe, another co-chair with Larry. What we're trying to do here is answer some of these questions that we have about how we get people inside the GGM to know that SIM is out there, regardless of what it's called. The fact is, at one point in time, work at the GGF came to a complete standstill. There was no work going forward because we did not have a common information model. And then we got this blue schema started out. Alright. So, that kind of puts SIM in the background
And what we're trying to do is suggest to people, we had some people on the phone saying that there's so much echo over here, you couldn't hear. But the bottom line here is, we agree that the common information model is so pervasive throughout the needs of NGGMI, and yet it's not there. Nobody's using it. Nobody's thinking about it. So we're going to approach this in two angles. First, with Andrea's help on the DMTF side, we want, and they have committed, to bring more people in from the DMTF so that we have a DMTF representative inside the GGF work groups, all of them.
Any work group that wants it.
Any work group that wants it, because then at the same time, they don't know they want it. They don't know that they want it. So here's the other side. To get them to know that they want and need this, that's this workshop. We want to get people, the GGF membership, interested in attending this workshop. We want to promote this through our area leads, through other area leads. We want the other area leads to know about this workshop. We want for it to not just be GGF 11, but GGF 12, and perhaps GGF 13. Whatever we need to do to get all of the membership at GGF understanding that they need a DMTF representative, because the DMTF has already done so much work that a lot of GGF development is reinventing this wheel. We don't want that. We can take a huge, gigantic step forward if we would just get the membership involved. Like Frederick, your question is, how do we get the GGF membership
aware?
This is how we're going to approach it from both sides. We're going to bring DMTF in, and we're hoping to use the CGS work group as a focal point for these people from the DMTF. Get together, make sure we're all on the same page, go from there out into the other groups. And in order to get that started, we want this workshop.
That answers.
We're going to be able to attend this workshop in Hawaii, so we want another workshop just like it after that.
That's first things first.
First things first, but our area is sitting here, and I want to pound it in his head through this. Two workshops.
Yeah, one thing, that suggestion about process, you know, workflow and process, maybe not even picking on any work group, pick just two areas and not only have demos but have another major bullet that's an example. Like, even if it's jobs, we've done a lot of work just in JSIM on jobs. Two examples, jobs and workflow process. I think that, as opposed to picking on any work group, I really don't want to do that. That would be a really good major bullet to talk about, is something that people go, oh, jobs in process, I get that, yeah.
And the demo idea, it centers around an impression, you know, impress someone with what can be done. There's a lot of detail work that goes into SIM that it's very difficult and tedious work. But once it's done, you can demonstrate how effective it is. And that's the idea of SIM.
Yeah, that answers all my questions.
Answers all your questions. Okay. So what about you over there?
Towards it, but I would just say that I know that UML has multiple ways of representing process. And it's going to be critical for you to take an example like that and clearly show the uses of UML and model of this process so people can catch on. So that would be an important thing to do here.
So you would like to see UML.
Yeah, well, this question of thinking which UML subtool to use so that in order to capture the information that people want to represent, so probably it would be a good idea to do a little bit of research into one of these groups that's handling one of the conventions. see what it is that's important to me and try and pick a representation of this or this in order to connect with it as soon as possible.
So we like your idea of what other people here, who would attend this workshop?
Lance.
I mean, who would like to attend whether you could go or not? So yeah, some of you who have attended or cannot understand what I mean. Okay, but the majority of people here could go. What we're hoping is that the vast majority of the GTN membership will eventually make their way here.
So, yeah, and so the question is, we would appreciate, first of all, anyone here who is not an active member of the CGS work group. We solicit your membership. We'd like you to, to join the working group and the email list. If you would like to join, I don't actually have it, but it's just yes. Some viral promotion and go out and make sure that people know about the workshop and so we can get as many people involved as possible. So, are there any other questions or any other suggestions? Well, we first thought about using SIM in the summer of 2002, and so the first hesitant step winning the GGF with respect to SIM was the formation of this working group. And it was not our initial thought that we wanted to have a workshop on SIM for the whole body, but we had a particular task in mind, and we were thinking that SIM would be a great way to do discovery on resource information. That was our initial thinking, but we've come to the realization that it's more important and really can have greater capability across various work groups. So why did it take so long is the same question you can ask about why is taking any working group in any standards body so long to produce a standard, or why does it take long for things to bubble up and for people to realize how important they are. It's a standard problem.
What happens everywhere? What originally happened was, as I mentioned, that there was one time when the work at GGF came to a halt. And I don't know if it was politically motivated. The idea was GGF was going to come up with their own common information. The people, the membership, wanted to do it themselves. I think at the time they had no clue what was involved. Nor did they even know about PETF and the hundreds of thousands of possibly millions of hours that have already been involved in developing an information model.
in particular, even, you know, I work with Globus, so, you know, even Globus in creating the first version of MDFs, you know, it was originally called a netted competing directory service, but in any case, you know, an information model was created to represent the resource information about a computer and, you know, its performance, its space, availability, its memory, and all that stuff. But the stuff was already there and sent, and there was no, in fact, reason to recreate any of that, but nobody within, you know, folks really was aware and or paid attention to it. So, you know, it takes time for these things to, you know.
It's similar to where the Odyssey created this first version of the Odyssey spec, and yet the Oasis people got buy into it. There was no synergy there. You know, there should have been some communication there, and there wasn't. So now we've got this new impetus to get these two together so that they buy in with each other, and that's what we don't want to have with the other workers that are doing the work and developing the specs. We want the common information model to be integral to everybody's working.
So one of the values, real quick, is not what we have, but what we know didn't work. Which we found a lot of things that didn't work. And that kind of knowledge, you know, don't repeat our mistakes kind of thing, is valuable too.
Right. And another aspect of one thing we
want
to emphasize too is that this is not necessarily just us adopting. It's not necessarily the GGF adopting the DMTF specs. It's the DMTF is interested in what the GGF has to offer and developing and improving and modifying what they have. So it's a two-way street. And so when I mentioned political here, you know, it really occurred to me at the time. Carl Kesselman had to step in and say, look, we are going to adopt SIM. We are going to work with the DMTF on this. If you want to create a common information model of your own, you have to go somewhere else to do it because we are not going to reinvent all this stuff. And there was a huge group that wanted to start from the ground and work up instead of starting with the DMTF, starting way up here. They've done so much work, it would be useless for us to start from the ground up if that was the thinking.
Okay, so we're here. A more particular question now. In other grid projects, they're using the global schema that comes with MDS, and some projects use the glue schema. Are actually out there grid projects really in their daily life using the SIM already? Can you point me to those?
Not that I'm aware.
Or if I'm now starting a new grid project, can I take the SIM and start working with it? But that would be needed, otherwise, you know, if you only talk about the modeling and don't put it in practice, you will not find out what is missing.
Yeah, if you could do that, if you could start with that would be great.
I think the goal is this convergence on WSRF and let's move here, that the toolkits will do these.
In particular in the case of Globus NDS, it's an issue of the ease with which the information can get out of the SIMOM and into your index service. And, you know, today it's a little difficult to map the data into an XML schema that can be used for interoperability, but that's going to change. And so as that changes, it's going to become more natural to, you know, to use the SIMOM that comes with Solaris or the SIMOM that comes on AIF as, you know, the source of information without having to create new information providers or things like that.
Moving project. Yes.
Yeah. And that's the eventual goal.
So I say no today, but 6 months from now, definitely a year from now, yes.
Okay.
So anyway, we're out of time right now, but there's the second session of CGDS this afternoon at 4, right here. And at that session, we're going to actually talk, you know, about specific effort to address the use cases of Dave's working group, so everyone is more than welcome to come back. In fact, I encourage everyone to come back and participate in that as well. Thanks.